All right, what's going on, everyone? Preston Stewart and Sayer Payne, more stories. We have gotten in a pretty good rhythm of doing these Friday kind of interview conversation style shows. And we're going to keep those going because they're awesome, or we enjoy them at least. They're all with veterans, people associated with the military, people still in the military, and we've got some really good ones coming up. We're going to try something new as well, which is adding a little more content to the plate. Instead of just one show a week coming out every Friday, that's an hour to an hour and a half, sometimes longer. We're going to sprinkle in some shorter ones like this today that are going to be on all sorts of topics. There's just a bunch of random stuff that Sayer and I kind of get into the weeds on. And they're fun to talk about, interesting to dive into. So I don't know how else to tease it because the topics aren't like set. I've got one for today, but Sayer, what do you think? Anything to add to that?
It's just... Yeah, I mean, the fact is we've got opinions and thoughts and concerns that we like sharing and talking about. But when we have someone, like a Sebastian Younger or a author or a guy like Bob Walker, who is in the shit in Vietnam, the whole point of those sort of conversations is to listen to them in a lot of ways, right? And hear their stories.
Yeah.
It's not our little platform to be really proactive in what we want to say and think. It's a conversation about with that person. That person to me has the spotlight and we're giving them, I don't want to say like the platform, but I want them to talk. I hate it when I talk for a while, to be honest, on when we have a guest, but when it's just you and I, when we're just, you know, we've been friends for such a long time, it's just a different sort of animal and more personal, of course.
Yeah. And so some of these subjects and one we're going to get in. So the way we're going to kind of go about this is each one of us, we've got things we're interested in. We spend a lot of time thinking about, and then what'll happen is we'll get on the phone sometimes after a podcast even, and just kind of hammer through these things and they're different. Like, We do have different interests. I've been spending a lot of time on the war in Ukraine, and most of the things that are kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, keeping me up at night, that like I can't really resolve in my head, have to do with that conflict. That's not the case with Sayer. He's not sucked into that black hole like I am right now. So these are going to be different topics week to week, episode to episode. But with that, I can dive into the first one. You ready for this, dude?
Yeah.
All right. So I made a video about this on YouTube and TikTok. So if anybody, I'll link that in the show notes if anybody wants to see it. Just kind of an overview, but it's an article from FAIR.org, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. And a couple of people they viewed it as not a very accurate report. So I'm sure somebody will say I'm dwelling on it. I'm just having a hard time squaring this in my head, but anyways, the title is Invasion News Fits on Front Page More When an Enemy Does the Invading. And I'll read I'll just read some parts here to give you some context. FAIR examined front pages of New York Times between April 1st and 30th, 2022, and compared those from May 1st to May 31st, 2003. The dates represent the second full calendar months of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the U.S. invasion of Iraq, respectively. In the stats, in April 2022, there were a total of 179 stories on the front page and 79 concerned the Ukraine invasion. That's 44%, against 18% in that time period for Iraq. And then they look at the top of the front page, 75% of those were on Ukraine, 25% on Iraq. So there's like so many different parts of this. And I think that's where I'm kind of struggling to like pull out my thoughts. I wasn't dialed in on the, I was paying attention to the war in Iraq 2003. I was a junior in high school when that happened, right? Mm-hmm. 2003, both were. Yeah. So I knew what was going on, but like, I wasn't reading the New York Times every day. And today I am every day looking into Ukraine stuff. So like, that's definitely different. The New York Times is different. The way we consume media is different. How do you compare a tweet today from a random influencer? Like, that might get more reach than this New York Times article. So it might be more important. And that wasn't a thing in 2003. And it's just the New York Times. It's not any other publication. But I thought there would be more focus. I thought it'd be closer to equal because at that time in Iraq, there were US troops dying. The war had really just started. Like the insurgency hadn't taken hold yet, but we don't have our citizens dying in Ukraine. So I don't know. Anything jump out to you with that right out the gate? I don't know where to, I don't know what it makes me think. It just makes me think a lot of things.
I'd say number one, it is a, to your point, it's different. We're in a different world than we were 20 years ago. Even the, you're saying how news is consumed. The New York Times is different now than it was, but like America's different. What it means, like, I don't even know in 2022, can we even define what it means to be an American versus let's say 20 years ago, those definitions have changed and those feelings and those sentiments. But the, I think also part of this with the Iraq thing being covered a fraction, I guess that's really the big picture takeaway. Yeah, it was covered essentially a fraction of what Ukraine has been covered. And sort of that question is like, well, why wasn't Iraq important? It was big operation for the US and sure, but that's to us. I mean, we like to think that things are probably more important when they are US centered, but I don't know on the world stage how important Iraq was at the end of the day. It may have felt important to us at that time, but like from a big perspective, like Iraq wasn't a big player in the game. They don't have a historical trade relationship with us necessarily. We had a war relationship, but like when you're talking about like Russia, it's now we're going back to the old powers that be of these European conflicts. We are at the end of the day, yes, we're a melting pot, but we are primarily originated and descended from Europeans. And so we have a very Europe-centric bias and lens of what's important and the real powers, meaning the Western powers that I'm air quoting, if people are listening. And well, Iraq was kind of a nothing.
So, okay, so that's a valid point because there's all these other little pieces to it where more at this time in the war, more people have died. It's, you know, we can't compare apples to oranges, Ukraine to this point versus Iraq over 20 years. But at the point that they're measuring, more people have died from both sides in the war in Ukraine than had died thus far in the war in Iraq from that short period.
How do you know that?
Okay. I'm assuming that's the case. U.S. coalition casualties were in the hundreds, if that, by this point.
I'm talking Iraqis.
I know. I mean, and I'm saying the war in Ukraine by the second full month, probably would have been in the 20 to 30,000 is what have estimated.
Interesting. Yeah, but are the Iraqi numbers? Because that counter propaganda going on now, we wouldn't have want to be telling those stories because we bombed. We know that whole shock and awe. We're bombing urban centers.
Okay, so that one. All right, I'll see that one. I don't know for sure that the casualties at this point are more. The impact on the global scale is definitely more. You were kind of getting at this, like
yeah.
It's just there's more immediate repercussions around the world that the war in Ukraine has that the war in Iraq just did not. So it makes sense that there would be more coverage in that sense. But does this comparison even matter? Or like, do you think on the surface, it looks like apples to apples, but comparing the New York Times articles from 20 years ago, two different conflicts, do you think it's kind of like a moot point?
Here is a possibly. Here's sort of a, I would call it like a Freakonomics analysis because they're always like looking at, I feel like behind the scenes stuff to give context. So I like Freakonomics in general, their sort of way of thinking. And these are all about quantity of stories. And back to how the world has changed, and New York Times, I mean, journalism was still sort of alive. I mean, biased, of course, always has been because a human writes it. That bam, immediate bias. But, this is worth looking into further, but I would argue in 2022, the way the media works and news stories and headlines is more content.
Quantity.
And so, okay. Yeah. And so maybe there were fewer stories 20 years ago, but maybe the stories were like longer. Maybe they took longer to write, maybe more in depth. Whereas here we have a very reactionary, Twitter wasn't invented in 2003. And Twitter immediately tells a story just from the front line a lot of times. So Twitter's pretty cool in that sense. You have like eyewitness people. There was the Hoover Dam had that explosion yesterday. Apparently it was a transformer, but guess what? Someone in line looking at the Hoover Dam was right there. And they're reporting on that before News Channel 7 gets their van there.
And might get more views, would have been might happening. Get more attention, sure.
And so, and now because of that, now this civilian, let's say, posts the actual headline first. And now the event itself, and now all the newspapers or any media outlet or a blogger or whomever, or us as podcasters have to now respond to that with content. And so I just think
everybody has to have an opinion, right? Everybody's got to chime in on the thing.
Yeah. Okay. And we know that these Yahoo News and all these places will create headlines, and it's all the same sort of AP or Reuters article. And they're all in Washington Post, they're all regurgitating the same sort of story, but they will alter their headlines days or weeks later. And so it's like actually hard to see in, let's say today, if we were to search what a headline of a New York Times article was actually a week or two or a month ago, even. These headlines get altered and whatnot. Now the print version is a little different, of course. And that's another point. Even though the internet and New York Times online existed in 2003, I would still think a lot of people got their information from the print-based paper itself versus whatever we want to call the media, whatever it is today. I mean, a lot of it's the digital stuff.
So I'm kind of coming around to this article. It's an interesting statistic, but I'm thinking it doesn't really tell us anything at all. It's kind of where I'm starting to land. Like, yeah.
I mean, I think that let's assume all the variables are the same just for this hypothetical, right? Like forget the Twitter issue and the online versus print media and the long form versus short form of journalism, the evolution of that, or short from long to short. Forget all of that. I do think it goes back to the stage of, or the players of the game of the European issue, the bad guy. That's what this headline's saying, right? They're saying, hey, look, the invasion news fits on the front page when an enemy. So they're, for one thing, declaring Russia as our enemy. I don't know. Have we formally done that as a country? Who's the one who gets to call them an enemy, by the way? Who has that power? Fair.org, I don't even know. I object to the word fair, by the way, in any and all contexts. I think fairness is an illusion. So the fact that they're sort of leading with fairness is kind of...
Your comment that who gets to call them an enemy, I think that goes back far, far, far. I mean, there's been... The two countries have been at odds for a long, long time. I got it. It's hard today to say, you know, if you grab somebody off the street and say, why is Russia and why are the United States and Russia at odds? I know that it's a complex question. We know that we are the other side against Russia in so many different ways, Soviet Union over history. But dude, that's complex. That goes back 100 years to before World War I even. There's been competition and mistrust between the two. There's not an easy answer is what I'm getting at. It's just historically the two sides have been at odds. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's right, but I got it.
At odds, throwing that out there. I would argue at odds is different than being a named enemy. I would think, to be honest, I would think if there was back to what it means to be an American, if we have this like sort of black and white verbatim enemy, I think we'd be a lot more united here in the United States. I think the fact that we're so fractured here shows we don't actually have an enemy. So therefore we create it from within because we sort of have to have one. There has to be an enemy for power to be maintained. And I don't know if it's Russia. Again, I don't know if they are or not. It's not my call. I'm just a dude in Ohio. But it does matter what other dudes and people across the United States think, because we are the composite of the Republic itself.
So that's a random one. I didn't know if we were going to get into this or not, but there's one of the challenges with this conflict that I've had is most Western media is, we're not getting the full story. I'll say that. I don't mean that in like a conspiratorial way, but like, we're just not getting all of the news. There's a lot of blind spots in this conflict. Whether people know that information and choose to not report it, or if it's not making it out of the war zone, I don't know. But there's just a lot of, you know, for a long time, Ukrainian casualties was at the top of that list. Nobody knew. Nobody had any idea. Somebody probably did, but there's reasons that's not going to be reported. So question for you, because you're kind of getting at this. Does that matter at all if we, the random citizens in the United States, don't get the full picture? Does it even matter?
I think it goes back to, I think we have a better picture of things. It's always distorted, but that's the question. In this 20-year span that we're talking about, do we have, we, the people, have more access to information now than before? I think the answer is yes. Is it more distorted, or is there more information now than there was? I'm not so sure of that because of the Twitter and the fact that anybody, I mean, I think that the truth is New York Times and all the powers that be going back to Vietnam or World War II, there's only a handful of news agencies, and they sort of had permission. They had to have sort of permission by the government to post and report on some things, and that's changed. And you were just talking though about Iraq, about those shock and awe casualties. We still don't know what's accurate from that. And we do know, I mean, we all know, we talked to Jim about the whole invasion itself being erroneous and just a total lie. And we've all just accepted that too at this point. Like nobody even really, people just move on past that, which is kind of interesting.
So does it matter if we have that information or not? It's kind of like, I have this feeling of like anger when I get into some of these things and I can't find the solution. It's like that information is there. It's just not being presented. I know in some cases for some stories, there's greater motives and reasons to keep things hidden or whatever. Like you can find the full spectrum depending on the story over time. But like, I keep coming back to like, but does it matter that Preston Stewart and Sarah Payne don't actually have the full story coming out of the conflict? Like, what's the difference if we do or don't?
Well, that's the question of, can the people be trusted with information or not? Or do we say the powers that be say, you know what, the people, they're too dumb. We know what's best for them. So we're just going to tell them what we think is best for them to know, right? Because they can't handle the truth, essentially. And I guess my argument is that I think there are more opportunities for the truth to rise today than 20 years ago. Does it always? No. Are there always people trying to conceal the truth? Yes. But I would argue that's always been the case. But what hasn't been the case are things like TikTok and Twitter, where we can like one-on-one converse with each other from across really the world itself. That's very unique.
The amount of footage coming out of this war is insane. Like there is fake stuff. There has been, and it's been pretty impressive. It's almost impressive how that's almost more impressive to me than the volume of real footage is how easily things can be faked, whether it's a video game or footage from another conflict, that just given the right angle, you can present that as something happened in this country or didn't happen in this country. It's super hard, but yeah.
Well, think of the deep fakes. I mean, think how much you've been on TikTok.
I can't even begin to.
And think of the manipulation someone could do. They could totally make you saying anything, I'm sure. Even myself, I just do it as a shit poster on TikTok. It's not like I have a volume, but I probably have enough. I've used enough common words in the English language to be able to be manipulated, I think. And anytime I see anything, like I saw that Saudi Arabian deal I don't know, the thing that happened, this is today's the 20th, July 20th, but the all this President Biden in Saudi Arabia and the oil being rejected, and he sort of gave an expression that didn't look great. I mean, it looked like defeated and like shocked. But when I watch those things, I'm like, I don't even know if this is real. I don't know what is real. And it's very difficult at the same time. So it's like, it's very conflicting, but I still think that it's just, the truth is harder to hide now than it was, but it's still hidden.
All right. So we'll wrap it up here. We're trying to keep these things relatively short. I actually feel better about this, fair.org. I'm not going to put much stock in it now, but if you want to take a look at it, I'll put the link in the show description. Let's see, this Friday, Phil Clay, that's what's coming out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Phil Clay, veteran author, pretty cool conversation. I had a lot of fun. Anyways, that's out Friday. And if you want to support the show, become a patron, links in the show notes as well, kind of some behind the scenes access, early access to episodes, things like that. But Sayer, anything to wrap up?
Share your opinion. If we're speaking out of turn or completely ignorant or lost, share it. You know what I mean? Like, last thing we want to do is be spreading bull crap. So I would say that about anything we say.
Yeah. These are
all it out.
These are all opinions.
Sure. We're trying to flesh it out as we speak to all these people and like really digest some of the events that either we've been lived personally through or we have as a shared collective as Americans of what we've been told.
I like it. We'll wrap it up there. We'll see y'all next time.
Alrighty.